The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Dude, that's Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
Welcome back to The Smiley Show, and a bit of a unique Smiley Show, as it were, because we were just together in Palm Beach for Cognizant Classic Week, doing a lot of fun stuff. Really, a TGL was kind of the centerpiece of the entire week, but a lot of other stuff that we're excited to roll out soon. And Smiley's fresh off a road trip straight from Palm Beach to Orlando, on site, getting ready for, of course, the Arnold Palmer Invitational Bay Hill this week. But you got some family matters to attend to first, Smiley. How are we feeling about the week we have ahead? I guess really tomorrow that we have ahead, taking Anna Carter to some special places.
Yeah, well, it was a great week at the Cognizant. The weather in Palm Beach was unbelievable, like 10 out of 10 week. When it comes to early part of the week, getting a lot of stuff done for the show. And good week for Cognizant. And then the drive was okay. Kind of a Palm Beach to Orlando's. It's just no man's land. It might as well be the moon or Mars, because nothing happens between Palm Beach and Orlando.
Florida is full of uncharted territory. That's something I've learned in the, you know, making the drive. We went to a playoff game, a Buccaneers playoff game one year, and traveling from Palm Beach to Tampa, to your point, you might as well be on a Mars rover.
That's another one. Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing going on there.
It's just the coast, I guess, is where people live. And then they just threw Disney World in Orlando, and everybody just goes in that part of the state.
A lot of Everglades. That are going on. The Everglades, a lot larger than I initially realized. Should have paid a little more attention when we were doing geography classes when I was younger.
Yeah, well, I'm here in Orlando, like you said. Mm-hmm. Big day tomorrow. Anna Carter flew in town with Francie. We're going to do some parks, I guess, tomorrow. I think they might go to a park on Tuesday. I doubt I'll do the full day like on Tuesday like I'll do tomorrow. Tomorrow is going to be a grind. And it's all about the memories, and I think Anna Carter just being like in this princess mode, you know, like she's ready to rock and roll. And I know what you're laughing about. You're laughing about Mickey Mouse, aren't you?
No, I just love that you said like it's all about the memories. Like this is some mantra that your your mind coach told you. Like, hey, we're going in, we're sweating the cut, and we've got like written on our glove. It's all about the memories. It's all about, if you ever get lost in the sauce tomorrow, it's all about the memories. It's all about the memories. Recenter, refocus, get after it.
Well, I think what I figured out pretty quickly in this being a parent thing is that, you know, I have great memories, you know, as a kid, right, of a lot of things. You know, I had great parents and, you know, we were able to go do some things like going to Disney World, going to golf tournaments as a kid, travel and do other things. And I realized that your parents are what make holidays special, what make trips special. So that's the kind of mantra and attitude I'm taking into Disney World tomorrow. I'm not going to be triggered by people standing too close to me in the line. Maybe somebody forgetting to put on deodorant.
You're just going to block. I love it. You're in a great mindset for the challenge you're about to enter, which I say if we want to do a very awkward segue, the challenge would have been similar to making the cut at PGA National previous years. Not so much this year. I'll say one person while we're on the topic of families that loves the newly overseeded PGA National is my son Walker, who spent the better part of Friday rolling around in the lush, overseeded rough on the left side of 18. Just had a field day, was yelling at me all day long when I was trying to stop in. He kept saying, watch golf. Like, okay, all right, we'll go out to the bear trap, we'll watch some golf. Crashed, had to take a nap early, but, you know, family time at the golf course,
How did Kadick do?
She was great. She was just bopping around in the carrier. I tell you what, she got the most upset when Her mother tried to cover her eyes with her bucket hat to block out the sun. She wanted to see everything. So they really, Walker and Kadick on the same page. They wanted to watch some golf. So we're off to a good start there. And why don't we just continue with some awkward segues? Because while we're on the topic of making great memories, we made some great ones this week at the SoFi Center. You might have seen it on the social platforms. Smiley's ace at On the Rocks, replicating some of the top shots of the season. Howie, is it fully settled in the days that have since this historic TGL moment that you created?
I think the shot was a surprise, considering maybe the inconsistencies when it came to maybe the ball striking on the simulator. Now, we're not going to judge a man who hasn't played enough on the sim, but didn't feel great. And sure enough, it didn't feel great before the swing. And here I am hitting a little close to the heel, a little bit of a save. Next thing you know, it's kind of turning over right at it.
I mean, you were dialed. I will say this. Of all the comments we saw on social, we're in the era of TGL one-match contracts, Tony Finau to LAGC. We got Nick Dunlap making his Atlanta Drive debut this week. A lot of people want to see Smiley Kaufman in a Jupiter Lynx GC uniform in the very near future. So, you know, at least he got some reps in. And I just say in general.
No thanks.
We were there on Tuesday night. We witnessed the first shank in TGL history, which was as electric as it
You can't seen. Hide, man. You can't hide in that thing. I just think that
not for you.
Nightmares.
Before we get on to Cognizant Classic, just overall takeaways from TGL the week, just seeing the screen in person. I mean, it's a pretty impressive place. I'd only ever been for media day, so to see it for a match was super cool. But what were your takeaways for the week?
Well, I think the SoFi Center was massive. That was like the first impression. It was like, man, it didn't seem that big on TV. It just seems like the ceilings are about the same height as that second story suite, but they could go like three or four more suites above that. That's how tall the ceilings are, realistically. But just a reminder that to those listening and watching right now, if you haven't had a chance to go and watch our TGL episode that we put out earlier in the week, we had, you know, it was basically, I would call it a behind the scenes of TGL and all of the things these guys are doing pre-match. And we got some interviews with Max Homa, the PA, Roger Steele. He was amazing. So chill, good vibes. And got to see this locker room, got to test all the surfaces. And then the play-by-play man himself, Matt Berry, kind of gave us a little bit of a tour around the green. And then we got to ask him some questions too. So do your favor, if you're into TGL and you want to know more, definitely go and watch that. That was a good episode. So just to sum all of that up, I guess, in a Spark Notes version, for those that haven't watched it, I would say that the experience of getting to, you know, a lot of places, you know, when the pros are playing, you don't get to test the surfaces, right? Like, it's the only where they get to play. And so it's kind of cool that they're like, oh, yeah, no problem, go chip and putt. It's like, oh, this is like a kid in the candy store being able to just chip and putt around the green, right? Like, that's what you and I could do for hours. So getting to experience that, hitting off the simulator, I think just if it were me and I showed up with a bunch of buddies, we could spend hours there, drink some beers, have a good time on the sim, and we wouldn't even know what day it was. That's how much fun it could be.
We cannot help ourselves. Like, if you put a massive indoor golf complex in front of us with some balls and a wedge, as Matt Berry did, and a putter, hard to keep us away from that. It's like, you know, I don't really know what a good analogy is. I will tell you, I'm going to slide over here. I'm mic'd up so you can still hear me because I have one prop we got to bring in one last time on the show. And that is...
Please tell me it's a FedEx hammer.
Hammer's all the way back. We got hammers during the match, which was electric, and the match itself was a ton of fun. I will say, of all the cool things that we did that week, I was lucky to get an invite back a couple days ago to go to Boston Common Shoot Around with Rory McIlroy, Adam Scott, Keegan Bradley, and that was another sort of additive experience to the whole thing of just watching the way those guys prep. I mean, I think it looks very relaxed on TV, but the amount of hours those guys put in and just the things they're thinking about in terms of the way, you know, where they need to hit the screen if they're trying to hit a certain shot shape and the spin rate of certain balls and just the windows they want to see it in. I all just fascinating stuff. And Rory, Adam, and Keegan were all great to let me bug them with lots of questions that I'm sure they would have preferred to not answer. But I thought that was a super cool thing. I just start to finish. I think it's a product that, you know, hopefully we see more of, more teams maybe in the future, bigger build out for the SoFi Center here in South Florida, maybe some other locations. I think seeing it for the first time in person to me said, you know, this is a product that I think is distinct enough from the PGA Tour that, you know, I don't think it's going to go away. I think there are a lot of people that are interested in buying franchises and building this thing out more. And it was cool to be a part of it. And big thanks to the team there at TGL for getting us set up to shoot some cool content.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit more about Walker's affiliation with Boston Common. Now it seems like he kind of bought low at a good time. We're talking about Walker, Charlie's oldest son.
Yes. So I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, I just thought, you know, like many fathers and sons, you know, you fall in step. You like the same teams. I'm, of course, a lifelong Bay Golf Club fan. Just thought that was going to be the path that my son Walker would tread. But there's been some recruiting that's happening. Adam Scott gave him a small little frog figurine, little Boston Common ball frog figurine. And Walker is calling it Froggy Froggy. And he will not let anybody else touch it. And it has not left his sight since Adam gave him Froggy Froggy. So I think maybe unfortunately for me, Walker is now a Boston Common fan. Probably a nice juxtaposition for him being an Eagles fan. You're experiencing the highs there. Good to experience the lows of being a Boston Common fan unless they pull off a miraculous backdoor entrance to the playoffs and make a Cinderella run. But yes, I think we're just going to have the family's going to have a spread of different teams. Who knows? Maybe Anna Carter won't be a Jupiter Lynx fan. She might pick a different team as well. That's just going to be something you're going to have to live with, Smiley.
Yeah, definitely. So I love how all the way leaned in you are with TGL. Like, you know, it's I'm not saying it's a bit, but for me, but it kind of is to this point, because until my Jupiter Lynx crowd really takes this seriously, then why should I, you know,
fair,
take it seriously? Because I mean, if you listen to the episode, Roger, we asked him the question and said, who's worked the hardest, who hasn't? Kind of tough.
Yeah, no, a fair point, fair criticism. I think like all the best bits, this also started out as a bit for me, and then as I kept leaning into it, I the lines got blurred of what my, you know, where did the bit stop and the real person begin? And now I feel like I'm just all the way in. So we're here, we're doing it, we're having fun at the SoFi Center. And by the way, look forward to that on our YouTube. We got the ace that Smiley makes is part of a larger project we're doing where Smiley recreated some of the top moments of TGL's inaugural season, and there are a lot of fun ones in there. So don't miss out on that. Make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel. Let's talk some PGA Tour golf here, Smiley.
Yeah,
we had a brand new winner on tour. Joe Highsmith shoots 64-64 on the weekend with a very hot putter to win his first PGA Tour event. And this was sort of a reversal in many ways from where we started the week. Jake Knapp's 59 on Thursday. Looks like he might run away with the thing. Here's what I want to do first in talking about just Joe Highsmith. How did he get here specifically? And it's a fascinating journey because he finishes 18th on the Korn Ferry Tour in 2023. That's how he ends his PGA Tour card in 2024. Last season on PGA Tour, finishes the FedEx Cup 160th in the standings, you know, leading into the playoffs, right? So he is on the outside, very much looking in. Then in the FedEx Cup fall, this is what he does. Pro Core Championship T13, Sanderson Farms T55, Black Desert Championship T6, Shriners Children's Open T16, Worldwide Technology Championship 5th, RSM Classic T11, works his way all the way down to 110th to retain his card, which, by the way, this was next season he would not have a card because it's going to be top 100. So that's how he gets to getting a PGA Tour card in 2025. And then this season, I'm sure everyone could have seen this coming because he missed a cut at the Sony, T66 at the Amex, missed a cut at the Farmers Insurance Open, missed a cut at the WM Phoenix Open, T17 at the Mexico Open, but wasn't in red hot form. And then he comes in here, stripes the ball, and has a hot putter and gets it done, wins his first PGA Tour event. So to me, that's, I think that's a fascinating for a number of reasons, but mainly because this is a guy that next year wouldn't even be in this event. He'd be on the Korn Ferry Tour, or maybe he'd be one of those guys in that conditional 100 to 125 list that gets in. But I just, cool to see a guy like that get his first PGA Tour win.
Oh gosh, all credit to him. Shooting 7-under on the weekend, where, you know, I think this is where I would say, how does a guy who just makes the cut on the number win? So the one big thing that you have to remember is that I think Joe was very, very fortunate that the cut stayed at 5-under. If it went to 4-under, the tournament would have been forced to play threesomes, and then he would have been going off late in the afternoon, or later in the afternoon, last tee time off of the back. What ended up happening, the cut stays at 5-under. 67 guys make the cut. PGA Tour is able to go off in twosomes. And so Joe Highsmith, making the cut on the number, goes off early with no wind and goes out and shoots a really good score. Again, all credit to him. But when you're in the back of the bus, off of the back, they're long rounds. It's hard to get in as much rhythm. So I think that had a lot to do with the four, like plenty of players really that made the cut on the number, went out Saturday morning, played really nice and not a ton of wind. And it kicked up in the afternoon. The green started to kind of firm up, start to kind of look like a different color. And then Sunday, right? You know, he's not all the way in the back of the final group. So he had some holes where the wind wasn't quite humming quite as much. It kicked up for the second to last group on the ninth hole, and he was two or so groups in front. So he was kind of through 11 on the 12th hole, but still incredible round today. I'm not trying to take anything away from him in this. I'm just saying that, wow, very fortunate that the PGA Tour ended up going in twosomes and that the cut remained to where he wasn't teeing off last on the back nine, because that's a totally different situation than going off early on a Saturday morning.
Yeah, it's so many things have to fall his way, including the way this course plays this week, which I think the mechanics of this are interesting. And there's a tweet that I'm going to read of yours and a viewer question that follows that to dig into this topic. But it just the mechanics of the whole Florida swing, right, where prior to this year you're looking at a month of just kind of getting beat up by four very difficult courses, PGA National, then you go to Bay Hill, then you go to TPC Sawgrass, and then you finish with Innisbrook Copperhead for the Valspar. And guys trying to figure out which ones of those do I want to play? Am I going to, you know, be a glutton for punishment and play all four? And so this year at PGA National, they overseed for the first time, and that changes the golf course in a very material way. And so your tweet on after the Friday cut was, a cut of PGA National at 5-under is just insane. Two rounds of 2-under is quality play and somehow not good enough for a weekend tee time. I know the conditions were much easier. That's still a hard pill to swallow if you shot, I've cut off the end of this tweet, so 4-under, I guess. So then the viewer question comes from at William T. Stewart. Maybe a topic for the pod, but how does the tour decide on how hard they want a course to play? Is it the individual tournament, the tour officials? Do they take into account the field for TV excitement? What are your thoughts there?
Well, I think PGA National, I guess, from maybe he's under some new ownership. I'm not sure if it's Troon. I think it may be. And they made the decision that the tournament, as far as just getting ready for it, from an agronomy standpoint, it typically wasn't good enough, like for the amount of seasons or for their golf season, I guess you could call it, where people come down and play. It was just not the best of shape, and the overseed was a way in which they could kind of lengthen it a little bit. And personally, I think it was a great decision, although I think they probably went a little bit too light on how short they cut the rough. If they would have done it correctly, the overseeded fairways were perfect. Like walking on them, I never saw one bad lie the entire week. The greens did exactly what you wanted them to. Now, I think Thursday, or I should say earlier in the week, they did had some rain on Monday that kind of softened these greens up. And they had some rain, I believe, Wednesday night before the Thursday morning round, where everybody went super low Thursday morning. There was no wind, like zero wind. So you could just go pin hunting on Thursday morning. But I'll get to the answer here in a minute with just how these, how the PGA Tour sets up these golf courses, or how it's perceived to be. But I do think that this, that PGA National, if they just had the rough up a little bit more and it punished some bad drives. Like I saw way too many drives that I've hit in the past and I wouldn't have been in a good situation that were totally doable this week. So that was the big difference to me, is that half a shot that you're able to kind of maybe pick up that you typically would have to play out when it comes to hitting it right on 11, the par four with the water. If you hit in that right rough, I've had to lay it up into that left fairway before. When I've hit it left of seven, the par three, I've had times where I can't even find the golf ball around chipping greenside. A couple times this week, I walk up to golf balls left of that green and I'm like, is this a joke? So there was this rough was the big issue. It should have been much, much longer. So that's my only grief with PGA National. Other than that, you can't do anything about the wind not blowing. Typically always blows, right?
Yeah, I think that that's really well said. I mean, just to kind of honestly echo a lot of the points you've already made, I talked to a player who was just asking about the whole overseas situation and why they chose to go this path. And the answer was just that this, you know, PGA National, it's an older Bermuda that they have down there. You know, we're in an era of all sorts of turf grass development where they have, you know, Paspalum and Zoysia and all these things. But even in the Bermuda department, you know, the Bermudas are using on greens now or on approaches. It's a lot more advanced than the Bermuda that was at PGA National. So there is a need for overseeding, so you don't have some of those tight lies around the green. They're a little frustrating to tour pros. And
it got ratty too, Charlie. If, like, for a couple years there, it wasn't good. Like, it was kind of like super grainy and just ratty Bermuda. Yeah. Just like it was, you know, like when you play
like
Bermuda
2 years ago,
it just feels like when you take a whole divot. It's like a big clop of Bermuda that kind of comes up. And that's kind of what was happening. So the overseed, it made it just so pure to play off of.
But kind of to your point as well, that there, you know, there's some levers that you can pull that are in your control. There's some that are out of your control. If you pull the lever that says, hey, we're going to oversee to make this a little less penal in these tight lies, but then you also get a ton of rain leading into the week and it doesn't blow, you made the course a lot easier, and two of those things are out of your control. So
yeah, that's why we saw the low scores on the historic low scoring average on Thursday. And then Friday, it was a lot of the same, but still a little bit more difficult, but it started to dry out in the afternoon Friday for the most part. And then Saturday afternoon, you started to see like, okay, it's starting to firm up a little bit, dry out. And then Sunday, we definitely saw it.
Yeah, and let's talk a little bit about the lowest score, Jake Knapp's 59 on Thursday. Obviously, a phenomenal round.
Do you want me to answer the real quick before you get there on the how the PGA Tour sets up golf courses?
Please. I never really answered that. Yeah, let's really pin you down, make you answer all
my
the
bad,
props specifically.
Well, this was the question that was asked on Twitter, and so I was thinking about this, and a lot of times it had to do with the schedule for the PGA Tour on how they set up courses, because guys were definitely struggling at Bay Hill with how difficult they've made that golf course. And players were trying to figure out, okay, am I going to play the Cognizant and then go to Bay Hill? I know the schedule's kind of changed over the years on what's before and after events, but now it's the Florida Swing. It used to have this feeling of, man, once I get done with the Florida Swing, it's like I have nothing left as far as energy goes. So guys just get beat up on the Florida Swing because Valspar is a very, very
so
difficult golf course.
Too.
It's firm, fast, dog-like fairways, and then players is obviously tough. And then Bay Hill, I mean, shoot, it's so difficult. So one of the ideas last year was for the Cognizant to be a toned down version of itself. And this year, I think you saw a toned down version, and then other factors that we just kind of talked about make it to where it played historically easier.
What else goes into a player's decision to choose a tournament beyond just do they like the course and is it a good fit for them? Because it seems like there are a lot of names that are either have committed to play Valspar or talked about doing that that you wouldn't normally associate with that event, and that's kind of increased the past few years. So is that just a credit to that tournament director or the suite of things that they're, you know, putting in front of those players' families? I'm just curious.
Players are always going to go and play golf courses they feel like suit their game. Mm-hmm. But the big problem right now is that the signature events are not spaced out. They are right next to each other. So how many of you can look at the PGA Tour schedule and see, like the West Coast, for instance, how many signature events are back to back? And then we have Bay Hill and then Players back to back. And what it's doing is for all these guys that are in these events, they don't want to go play four events in a row. So they're going to have to miss one of them. So they'll either take off, whether it's this week at the Cognizant, or take off the Valspar. And they'll play Bay Hill and they'll play Players. And some of them won't even play either of them on the front or back end, being Cognizant or Valspar. I think they would be in a much healthier spot on the PGA Tour if you were able to space out these events. And then I don't think you'd have an issue quite as much with how you set up the golf course, because, hey, now these guys actually have like a legit decision. Do I want to go play a course where I know if, you know, the players that don't have their stuff are going to be maybe tested a little bit more, and I could kind of get by with, you know, a little bit more control, all the things that you need to play hard golf courses. So I think that's something that if I was a really good player, I want it to be hard, because I feel like it weeds out the players that aren't quite as good. This golf course to me, it does weed out players because you got to be really good, but I still think that it wasn't penal enough off of the fairways and around the greens.
This was a course you listed in your top five on tour. And I wonder if you know, this version of this course this year, if that would still land in the same place given the way it played. And especially if they continue to overseed in future years.
Oh, gosh, I hope they continue to overseed. It was perfect. But
yeah,
the way the rough is set up now, it doesn't stay up there for me in the top five. You got to have some rough out there to challenge these guys to hit fairways, because the only way you weren't getting to the green is if you had a tree in your way. The rough was not long enough at all for players to have to play to the front corners of the greens.
It is interesting. I think there's a larger discussion here too about, you know, we've talked about the tour schedule and where it could smooth itself out in certain spots. I understand why you put all these events together, but then you got a lot of guys that have just finished being beaten up by the Florida Swing and are unlikely to, you know, go and play a few additional weeks in Texas before the Masters. They're trying to kind of prep specifically for Augusta National and things like that. So I don't know if there's I don't have a solution off the top of my head here how you clean up the section of the schedule, but it feels like there is some reconfiguration potentially here that could happen that makes us a smoother sort of flow into the event on everyone's calendar every year. So,
yeah, we'll see. I mean, I'd like to see them space out these signature events a little bit more so that these other events will have players play, would be my hope.
Yeah. Well, okay, let's get to Jake Knapp's 59 on Thursday, then finishes 70-68, 72. On Sunday, at the time of recording, we're talking about today, but you're, of course, listening or watching this on a Monday. That tripled 11 was a killer. I don't know if he has that to do over again, if he still tries to play that ball out of the water and has to hit it a second time out of the water. I think he still has to make birdie on 18 coming home to force a playoff with Joe Highsmith. So, you know, maybe he makes the same decision over again. But that was clearly the turning point for him when he was in the driver's seat. Kind of there were some lead changes that happened, you know, going into the weekend. But he was the guy that was in the driver's seat for most of the round until 11 on Sunday.
Yeah. If you had to rank what day you would want to shoot 59, you know, of 4 days of a golf tournament, obviously the number one answer would be the last round. But then after that, wouldn't you say Thursday would be the next best day so that, you know, you have a day after that on Friday to where it's a flusher day? You know that it's not going to be anything like it was the day before. You just try to survive. You got to say thank you to everybody that says great round the day before and all the press that comes with it. And then Saturday, it's like, okay, let's go try to win a golf tournament on the weekend.
That's a great question. And I'm going to kind of answer it, but I want your perspective on this once I finish answering it. Is that it would seem to me that if you shoot the 59 on a Saturday, that's a heavy lead to sleep on. Unless you just put it completely out of reach and you are going to win the golf course going away as long as you keep the golf ball on the planet.
That's a good
right?
point. That's a good point.
So I feel like I want to do it on a Friday. Thursday to me is just too much time.
Is that last for you?
I would say obviously Sunday's the first one we want to do. I would say Friday next, and then I would say, man, I'd probably say Thursday's the last day I want to shoot it.
Wow. Okay.
And maybe it's just because if I do it Saturday, I even though I'm sleeping on the lead, I kind of know time and score at that point. It's just 18 holes left. I know where we stand. Now, even there, I think you can get a little defensive. But Thursday, to me, I think is so tough because people are asking you about it for multiple days. Even if you go out and shoot a bad round, I mean, a 70 is not a bad round on Friday, but it's obviously not 59. You let a bunch of guys back into the tournament. So people are still going to be asking you questions about it at that point. They're going to be running the highlight reels. It's just a whole thing that's over your head all weekend long. And then if you don't win the tournament, as he did not, you're the guy that shot 59 and didn't win the tournament, which that stinks too. You're the forever on that graphic of guys that went sub 60 and didn't get the deal done. So I think it's tough to shoot 59 on a Thursday. I think, I don't know. How would you rank them?
I think I would go obviously final round first. That's a no brainer.
Yep.
And part of me was thinking Thursday would be my next one, but you kind of convinced me Saturday would be my next one because I think being able to just focus on one round and most likely you did something to either get into contention or you have a big enough lead where it's something that you can just survive in advance and babysit an 18 hole round. So I think I'm changing and going from I'm going Sunday, Saturday, Thursday, Friday.
Wow, you're saying Friday last.
And the only reason why is because Friday is kind of your dump day. After you shoot 59 on Thursday, Friday's your dump day. Now we have the weekend to go focus on winning a golf tournament. That's my thought.
Yeah, I think it just feels
normal. It would just feel normal at that point.
Right. Well, that's what I feel like. You kind of sneak out of there on Friday with your 59. You know,
but Saturday's moving day. That's my thought. It's like, hey, okay.
That's a big move. 59 on Saturday.
Like you don't want Saturday, you know, after your 59 to be your babysitting day.
Stolen. Yeah, that's fair. 2 days of babysitting is worse than it might just be right down the ladder for me. You know, Sunday, Saturday, Friday. But I feel like Friday here, I want to go early, late. I want to shoot my 59 and I want to come in the house right at the end of the broadcast window. So I get a quick interview and I go to the clubhouse and then least amount of media possible. And then I go out and I handle business on Saturday, Sunday.
You would want the early late on the 59? Oh, wait. Okay.
I'm trying to Friday. You're doing it on Friday. My 59. Okay. Yes. Okay. Yeah. I'm trying to bury it. I don't want to talk about it until I'm holding up some silverware on Sunday. Then we can have the conversation. That's where I've arrived.
You know, I ask you this question because Jake Knapp and I were talking about this on Saturday on the range.
Okay.
I was asking him about, was yesterday just a lot? He was like, yes. And that's how the conversation came about. It's like, well, what day would you want to shoot 59? It's like, well, definitely the last day. And then we both kind of agreed Thursday was a good day to shoot it.
Okay. Well, I mean, if that's what the man who shot 59 said, I'll take his word over anyone else's on it. If you're Jake Knapp, obviously you're disappointed, but you did something that's in, you know, PGA Tour history. And you're, you know, for a guy that wins at the Mexico Open and then we know was kind of banged up as the year progressed. So didn't necessarily play his best golf all the time, but made it to the playoffs, you know, had some highlights in there. And then now is kind of finding some form again now that he's fully healthy after the offseason. What are you taking away from the way you played this week?
Well, Thursday morning was as easy as that golf course will ever be. And just look at Daniel Berger, who hit his opening tee shot on Thursday on the 10th hole, the par five, into a palm tree, heads back to the tee, has to hit three off the tee, proceeds to hit it up by the green, chip in and make a par, and then go out and make eight more birdies and shoot a 63. So really, I know this is all hypothetically speaking, but he technically would have shot a 61. So there was another player that played just as or close to as good as Jake Knapp did that day. So really impressive stuff on Thursday. Everything went his way, and that's awesome. I think the decision on Sunday, unfortunately, I didn't get to see the lie or what it's really looked like as far as how far that ball was submerged in the water. But I'll say from Jake's standpoint, you know, when you have to think about it for that long to try to get it home, and I don't think he quite created the separation that he could have on Friday. That was probably his day that he could have really tried to stretch it out a little bit, but kind of stalled it a little bit. And then the rest of the weekend, you know, he had his ups and downs. Like, it really always kind of felt like, oh, well, Jake's going to win now. And then he would kind of go back, and then he would go up, and then he would go back. And that's kind of how it all was. And then of course, that 11th hole.
Yeah, well, I think you make a really good point there too, you know, leading in with Berger, but there were a number of guys. It wasn't like this course was easy only for him. You know, a lot of people think shoot 59, now you have a huge spread of shots. I want to say it was like a 4-3 shot lead. I want to say second place was TG was 9-under, 8-under.
I would love to see the early, who all from the top 25 was in the early late wave, because I think you'll see a majority of those players that teed off in that morning.
Mm-hmm. I will say on that topic, I think the one and done, I think we might be coming around, because I was close to having all top 20s. Where I ended up was Russell Henley. My pick was T6. I had Minwoo Lee T11, Luke Clanton T18, Daniel Berger T25.
And it should have been way better than that too.
Berger was, I heard he was a little sick. On Friday, maybe he wasn't feeling so well. So I think, or maybe he said he didn't eat enough before he went out to the golf course. So that could have been a lot better than that. So I'm just saying.
We're
fine in some form.
Hold on, we can't use that as an excuse on Friday. You know
what do you mean?
You know how many times your boys at the club you're playing with, you know, they say, you know what, I shouldn't have had that extra cup of coffee. I'm a little jittery, so don't judge me on this round, you know, because I'm not myself.
I know it because that's my
you live it. That's
play.
Your thing.
That's my game. You know, you're more worried about getting some ice in the cooler on the way out than making yourself a sandwich. And all of a sudden, you get on the course and you got, you know, a dozen cold ones, but a very rumbly tummy that impacts performance materially.
Yeah. You're not wrong. Well,
I'm sure that whatever Daniel Berger was dealing with is far different from that, but I'm just saying.
I think the biggest shock for me on this leaderboard, when I look at it now, is how confusing it looks to me based off of all of the possibilities I had in my head of what was going to happen, that it looks like this in a top five version, like Joe Highsmith, Jacob Bridgman, JJ Spahn, Max McGreevy, Ben Griffin. If you told me to create scenarios of a top five for Sunday, looking at a Saturday leaderboard, not only would I not have had any of these guys in the top five outside of maybe Ben Griffin, none of those other four guys I would have had inside the top 10.
Well, and that was because that was all a hard charge on Sunday, right? And with the leaders, that final group kind of falling away from it, where, you know, Joe Highsmith and Jacob Bridgman both go out, shoot 64s, and then JJ Spahn 66. I mean, I'm with you. It was at one point early
on.
I
thought your boy Henley too, Henley, man. I thought it was going to be him too today for a bit.
Well, I want to hit a few notables, because the guys I want to talk about on that list: Ben Griffin, Russell Henley, Michael Kim, Jordan Spieth, Shane Lowry, Minwoo Lee, Ricky Fowler. A lot of names that are you know, in the mix, kind of finding some form as we're trending in the direction of major season, that I just want to get some quick hitters from you on. But I think one of the biggest storylines from the week outside of Joe Highsmith winning, Luke Clanton making the cut for his 20th and final PGA Tour U accelerated point, earned that tour card. A lot of different directions I want to take this. I'm just curious. I was talking to Trevor Immelman about this today. When he was, we were looking at a scoreboard. When he was 5 under through 10, he's at 15 under. And we were just talking about the mechanics of what decision he makes if he wins the tournament. Because, of course, you know, if he gets his card through PGA Tour U accelerated, but he wants to go back to Florida State, you know, play in the national championships and then figure out what happens next. But he's in a very different category if he wins the tournament. And so do you think if he wins the tournament, do you think he pulls a Nick Dunlap, goes pro immediately? Or do you think he still go? Okay. All right.
Dude.
I mean, I have to ask the question, man. We're debating it.
No. If he would have won the tournament, he'd have been gone. And let's talk a little bit about what's next for Luke Clanton and talk about this PGA Tour accelerated program as he broke all of the codes for this thing, right? He's totally reset what this program looks like because he's played so well that they've had to cater towards, hey, this is possible. He's not going to be the last one to probably come out as an amateur to play this well. So Luke Clanton, I learned this today in our meeting that he cannot take up PGA Tour eligibility until June. I did not know this. I thought he had a PGA Tour card immediately. I thought he has a card, but he cannot take up eligibility until after NCAAs.
So, okay. So the NCAAs end on May 28th. Is it immediate the day after, or is it June 1? Mm-hmm. So, okay. So the Memorial is that weekend. I mean, if you really want to look at the timelines,
we get a sponsor.
The NCAA championships end on Wednesday and the Memorial begins on a Thursday. So he could play the Memorial as a professional. I mean, obviously that's a signature event, so he wouldn't be in it anyway, but I guess he could be one of four sponsor exemptions. And you think that's likely by the sound of it?
Oh, well, I can't put words in the Memorial's mouth, but at that point, I think only the four exemptions in the, for signature events can go to PGA Tour players. So in that case, he would then be a PGA Tour player when he takes up membership. So yes, he could potentially. And I think we should talk about, is this right or wrong? Should he be able to take up eligibility right away?
Yeah.
And I personally think that he should. I think it's, if he did all the requirements and he checks off every single box, he gets to 20. Why can he not just take up membership now?
It's interesting. It's interesting because obviously this entire program, I mean, we're talking about Luke in the accelerated sense, but obviously the base program that is upperclassmen or seniors only is all built around encouraging kids to go to college because they now have a pathway to making it to the PGA Tour through college instead of turning pro early or pursuing, you know, DP World Tour, just all these different pathways they can pursue other than going to college. Now there's a nice, clear way for them to go and play well and earn their card that way. So it makes sense to me that they've structured it in a way that incentivizes finishing out their time in college and seeing it through to the national championships. I get that. It's an interesting debate. I mean, to me, while I completely understand, you know, what you're saying, and it's different from the U program proper and the accelerated program. Accelerated is called accelerated for reasons because these high achieving kids that are racing past all the normal deadlines and they're good enough to play right now in the PGA Tour. So I can understand why you'd say, hey, he should get his card. He's got a picture of it in his hands on Friday night. You should be able to go tee it up next week on tour.
I think you should have that option, man. I do.
But I also get why they structure it that way, given the roots of the program and what it's trying to incentivize. You know, earning your tour card through playing, you know, college golf in the United States.
So what's the difference for you and an amateur Nick Dunlap going and winning on the PGA Tour and earning PGA Tour status and being able to take up membership right away?
Well, because I think that's – if you really – it's just we're going by the rule book. Yeah, well, it's because that's the way it's written. It's like if you win on the PGA Tour, you earn tour membership.
And, oh, what did Luke do?
But he earned. I mean, by the letter of the way that it's written, he earned his card via a program that awards it to him. And you know, after the NCAA championships are over, you know, at the end of May or June, whatever the timeline is, like that, he earned his card with criteria attached to it. So that's, you know.
Well, tell me this. I guess
I'm not saying it's a good rule. I'm just saying that that's what the rule is. You know.
I guess too. So when these kids win college events, are they getting points or no?
For the
like in this
program or the accelerated program?
Accelerated.
Accelerated, I think it's certain events, but I mean, most of it is it's winning awards or it's winning or it's playing well in tour events. Isn't there some of it that's based on national championship criteria or major amateur events? Mm-hmm. I have to go ahead and look into the PGA Tour Accelerated, like what
so
they get points
for. Here's the thing then on that. So that's total. If we're just awarding points based off high level amateur events, to me, that is not winning a college event. If we're trying to get if Luke Clanton gets his tour
for you now. Do you want to know which so tournament? Here's what they can earn points for in the accelerated program for tournament wins. 2 points for winning the D1 NCAA individual championship. 2 points for winning the U.S. Amateur, 2 points for winning the Amateur. I assume that's the RNA's version of the U.S. Am. 1 point for the Western Am, 1 point for the Jones Cup, 1 point for the Northeast Am, 1 point for the Southern Am, 1 point for the European Am, 1 point for the Latin American Am, 1 point for the Asia Pacific Am, and 1 point for the African Am. So those are the tournaments you get points for. Does that change your?
That just made my argument even stronger. Did you name one college event other than the national championship?
No, all amateur events.
So why are we having to wait till the end of the national championship when all of his points were earned in a world ranking type of matter in an amateur golf circuit? It seems silly to me that he can't take up status.
I what you're saying makes, if we're in a court of law and you're making this argument, you're making a lot of sense. You're swaying some people over in the jury. I'm merely saying that because the program is structured to incentivize earning a tour card via a collegiate pathway, I understand why they're also trying to incentivize participating in collegiate golf until the deadline that they've set to make it pass. I just, it may or may not make sense.
To me,
I get why they structure it that
way. It doesn't, like, yes, these players' rankings rise by playing college events and playing against each other. That's a huge part of how their rankings move up and how he earned the top amateur status. But also a lot of it's from playing an amateur circuit. I just think that there's an argument to be made here that this PGA Tour U Accelerated, it feels a little bit almost, it's not a full college thing. It's not like the senior PGA Tour U thing where it seems like that's judged on a college season.
Now they can also get points for playing in when they get, like, you know, David Ford, who was currently number one, he goes over
which
and plays DP World Tour, and he gets points for that.
Which I kind of disagree with a little bit. Like, if it's, I think that it should be like an apples to apples type of thing with that senior thing, but
I think that's fair.
I don't know. It's kind of weird that I would be so on one side with how Luke Clanton, who I think should be able to take up membership, but then the PGA Tour U senior thing, how I could see that would be very, at a disadvantage for a lot of kids.
Well,
because you're competing against each other at that point. Like, this is just one person trying to check boxes, like Luke Clanton. And then it's the other one where it's like, all right, we're grouping everybody in here. You start based off how you played. So guys that have had really good first three seasons are not screwed over, and that they can go out and, you know, if they play well, it's they're already like starting ahead.
Well, I think at a certain point, all of it's subjective, right? Because in the same way that we're looking at Luke Clanton's resume in comparison to like other players who got a bunch of accelerated points for winning awards that were voted on, you know, rather than Luke Clanton, who was going out and playing well in PGA Tour events, Another kid in at the collegiate ranks could say, well, okay, Luke got a lot of sponsors exemptions at these events. I wasn't afforded that same opportunity. I could have gone out and made a cut. I could have gone out and finished top 10, and then I'd have the points I needed to earn a tour card. Like, at a certain point, I think anyone can make some, you know, type of argument as to why it's not fair. For me, bottom line is I think it's a great program. It's awesome that Luke Clanton earns his card this way. We've hotly debated the PGA Tour Year Accelerated program on the show a number of times. And one thing's for certain, we're just keeping it rolling, man. We're keeping the debate rolling on this show.
Oh gosh. I just think you should have the option. If you do it, it's only going to be very few amount of kids. The only people that have done it is obviously Gordon Sargent, who's decided to stay in school. Hey, like, some guys want to just stay and keep working at it, you know, and fair. That's what Gordon's trying to do. And I think with Luke, he's proven that he's ready to rock and roll. And I think he's got a lot to play for right now, a ton to play for.
I think if that is probably the best argument, and it's a subjective one, but again, it's a fair one, is that Luke Lynn has proved to us time and again that he is ready to compete on the PGA Tour. And in the same way that he broke the mold in a lot of different ways of this PGA Tour accelerated point system, and they made changes that retroactively would have earned him his card earlier, this is yet another scenario where it's like, I get that Luke Clanton wants to stay and finish out the season and play with his Florida State teammates, which is awesome. But if Luke Clanton wanted to go, it's not like he needs another few months of playing college golf to make sure he's ready. He can go play right now and he's completely fine. I mean, he almost dang near won the golf tournament. He was ultimately four shots off lead, but he gets to 15 under when the leader, you know, started at 16. It's like, he's got a shot this week, you know? So
that's right. Well,
can I ask you this on Luke?
Yeah.
Just on the, something we talked about before. Now that he's earned his tour card, are you expecting to see a special invitation for the 2025 Masters?
Well, that's a good question. I think the answer should be yes. He's a top 100 player right now. He probably will move up to somewhere in the 80s after this week. So what I think the options that Luke has right now is that he could turn pro. He didn't have to finish the season with Florida State. I think he will. But there's an option where he could say, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and turn pro. And I'm not sure exactly how it works as far as his ability to be a professional and get sponsors invites, because he technically would get up to 7, but I'm not sure about exactly how that would work, because he can't maybe take up membership, but there's nothing that the PGA Tour can do to stop Luke Clanton from turning pro. He can turn pro and enter a PGA Tour event as a professional, but just not allowed to be able to earn FedEx Cup points. So he could get
out of the 7 he could get, would the ones he took as an amateur this season count against that 7?
Yeah, I would imagine.
So he's taken, what, I think 2 or 3 this season already?
He got one at Sony, he got one at Phoenix, and then he got one this week. So he has four more
exemptions.
He's got one as an amateur with
Valspar.
So I'm not sure exactly how that one would work, if it would hold up still as he got it for winning a college event, but still, I imagine they still would give him a spot. But that's an option, right? He could go and try just turning pro, be able to earn money. And what does it really change for him? He just doesn't have to play college events, and he can just focus on playing a professional schedule, knowing that he's got 4 starts before June. I don't know if that's the right thing to do or wrong thing to do, but if he gets into the Masters, that's 5 starts that you could expect before that event in June. And right now it's early March. It's not a terrible idea. Maybe not its best idea, but not a bad idea.
Well, I wonder too if, and this is all just, you know, speculation, but if part of the calculation of going by the rules of the program and waiting until the national championships are over, we know how much reverence Augusta National has for amateur status and what a role that's played in their history, is if if he decided to turn pro, if they'd be less likely to extend him an invitation, or if that would have no bearing on it. So, I mean,
I think they're inviting Luke Kland, the amateur,
as an amateur.
I'm guessing, right?
I will say it's assuming it all goes according to the plan that we know of right now. Seeing Lou Clanton tee it in the Masters, if he gets that invitation as an amateur with a PGA Tour card on the way, is gonna be pretty freaking cool.
Yeah, I think that the last thing we need to talk about with him is that I still feel like it could be playing for a Ryder Cup spot. I know it's silly to say, keep talking about it as like a potential option, but hey, if he shows up and plays good when he gets his opportunities, I think it's important for him to be able to get a start in the Masters so that he gets tested on a stage like the Masters, which, you know, the Ryder Cup is one of the biggest stages of the world of golf. So you'd like to see how he'd be able to hold up in other of the majors that same season against like competition.
It'll be interesting because, I mean, I assume he'll have to go through U.S. Open qualifying unless, I mean, by virtue of his finish last year or anything like that. I mean, do you know of other major exemptions that exist for him at this moment in time? PGA.
As an amateur, he'll get into the U.S. Open and the USAM for being the number one amateur in the world.
But at that point, he's going to be a pro, though.
A pro, yeah. That's a good point.
So will he get the – because I guess now that I think about it, Nick Dunlap played in the U.S. Open last year for earning an amateur for winning the USAM before. So he will get in as a pro. And then I'm wondering if there are other precedents.
The Open, he's going to have to continue to get his world ranking up.
World rank for the Open, and I assume the same.
Which at this point, I wonder. Well, I guess amateur rankings wouldn't have any bearing on what that would do to a professional world golf ranking, right? Because just pro events just is the only thing that probably
for
OWGR, moves.
Correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So, like, if he just started playing college events and just playing whatever, like I was just making sure that wouldn't move his
I mean, there's so much minutia and trying to kind of figure out all the rules that govern these sorts of things, but it's cool to see him earn his card. I agree with you, the Ryder Cup I think is top of mind. I think when he does make it on tour, he's going to get a lot of imagine a lot of tee times with Keegan Bradley. It's just throwing a wild guess out there. Yeah, so it's just been a close look.
It's just been a super slow start to the year for the Americans, especially top Americans. You know, last year was just so impressive to watch what like Xander and Scotty did. We haven't had just the full golf season where, you know, you've had Colin Morikawa, Jordan, JT, all these just Americans that are just firing every single week. And it seems like it's just been a little bit hit or miss at the beginning.
I know it's getting late in both of our locations. You got Disney World on deck tomorrow. I just want to close with that group that I mentioned earlier. Any thoughts on any of these guys, names I'm about to read? Ben Griffin, Russell Henley, Michael Kim, Jordan Spieth, Shane Lowry, Minwoo Lee, and Ricky Fowler. I can read the list again, but that's the full group of guys that scrolling through that leaderboard all kind of pop for me. Solid finishes for all of them this week and what you took away from their performances.
Just Michael Kim and Ben Griffin are playing some really solid golf right now. That's, I believe, four straight top 12s for Michael Kim. So just to see how well he's playing, he's already made more money this year than he made last year in just 2025. So incredible start for him. Ben Griffin also playing really well, earned his way into Bay Hill, which I think kind of goes into the conversation of the sponsors invites with Jordan and Ricky not getting a spot over at Bay Hill. You saw Jordan's comments in the end of today, just saying how bummed he was to not get a spot. It's interesting because you could look at it both ways. One way you look at it that, hey, you're giving other guys more opportunities. The other way you look at it is Jordan is on a list of three or four players that are the needle. You know, like when he plays well, people turn the TV on. When he's in a final group, when he's got a chance, people come out and watch. And I think that was a big mistake personally, being somebody that's in the TV side. We wanted a bad. There isn't one person out at Orlando didn't want him, or that didn't want him not to play. So from just that aspect of it, yes, we want him. You could understand, or you can make any excuse for him not getting a spot and giving other guys opportunities, because I think it's great when other guys get opportunities, but it's a crap system that we're in right now with the signature events, and 70 dudes is not enough. It should be 100. That's, you're just boxing yourself, and you're putting yourself in a corner right now, and you're making it tough on these, well, it shouldn't be tough, but they make it tough on themselves and they overthink it, like they did this time, but it is what it is.
I think it's exactly that. It's you're making the optics bad for no reason other than just choosing to arbitrarily set that as the number. And I don't quite understand why the next five and the swing five and the next 10 can't be the swing 10 and the next 20, you know, and really fill that field out of guys that, you know, okay, if you finish top 50 the year before, that's great. And then we're going to make it a 100 player field, and it will still be able to achieve a lot of the goals we want in terms of showcasing marquee players, getting them money. And, you know, but we can also have a cut. I mean, listen, it's a lot of guys are still going to get some free money because there won't be as many players in the field, but having a cut at a number that makes sense for pace of play on the weekend and things like that. I think with Jordan, I just find it really laughable, a lot of the arguments against taking Jordan in these tournaments, because as a guy that has won three majors, I mean, let's just even put aside his popularity. Guy who's won three majors, a guy who's working his way back from wrist surgery, just played great in Scottsdale. I know he didn't play as well in his other two starts, but he plays well again here this week at PGA National. And very, very easily we could see him play his way back into form and get that wrist right, and he can be right there contending with the best players in the world again, as he has in many years past. So to me, I just don't understand the whole merit, like there's not merit from a playing perspective that Jordan would be in this field. I just every time I see someone wringing their hands about that, it really makes me laugh. But that's where we're at with golf.
I think seeing him play well in Phoenix, I think, was probably the most frustrating thing, that of a reason why he didn't get a spot in Bay Hill. Is it was almost like a tease for us. It's like, all right, we saw him like getting contention in Phoenix and it was great, and then he found himself in contention this week at the Cognizant, and we're like, all right, sweet, what are we going to get out of him? And then he made a move today, and you're like, oh, what's he going to do? And making some big putts on the back nine, and you know, it just, he was so close to getting into that Aon Swing 5. He needed to get a top four, and he was right on that line. Just a triple bogey really was what separated him on Friday afternoon. He finished the tournament I think it was 15 under par, 14 under par, and 17 under par was T2. You know, that's just a triple bogey. 9-iron on Friday ended up being the difference for him, but there's no reason to talk about it anymore. We can't do anything about it. And I hope the guys that they pick play well. I just think that there's nobody that they picked will ever move the needle more so than Jordan would have.
And we've heard some cool stories on that front too. Like apparently Rafa Campos wrote a very moving letter, and you know, that's again, like, I'm not going to complain about that either. It's a sponsor exemption. The sponsor gets to do whatever they want with it. The tournament organizer, that's the way it's set up. So good on you, Rafa, for writing a great letter and getting yourself in. Hope you play well. But the whole thing is, yeah, I think
the tour boxes himself in with the, and the players decided this, right? Like, we as fans just have to be like, well, this is dumb.
Well, Smiley, I'm going to flip the script a little bit this week. I'm going to leave you with some final thoughts, which are, it's about making memories.
Yes. It's making memories.
It's about me. Right now, it's about going, getting a few hours of sleep. It's waking up refreshed. It's about making memories. Hope you all have a blast at Disney
Thank
World.
You.
At the time Thank of you. Watching, listening, Smiley's probably bouncing around, carrying some Mickey Mouse ears for Anna Carter. So we'll look forward to getting the full report on that soon. We'll have another guest in the feed this week. And then, And then we'll look for, just be on the lookout. We're trying to find the best time to serve you our highlights from a week at TGL. Very much looking forward to sharing that with you. Got the playoffs coming up. This is the last week of the regular season. Let's get a little hot take from you. Who's the fourth team in for TGL?
I think Boston Common sneaks in there. Wow. I feel bad. I feel bad for the Bay.
You think it's going to be a Bay Boston Common for that's going to wreak havoc on my household.
Mm-hmm.
I can't watch my poor son and his froggy go down to flames, but that's just how it's going to have to be if Boston Common works their way in. They're definitely gearing up for it. So, well, really fun week together. Looking forward to it next time at the Masters. Looking forward to that as well. But hope everyone enjoyed our content from TGL this week and look out for more of it soon. We appreciate y'all watching and listening. We'll talk to you right back here very, very soon.
You know, I listen to this podcast. It's really cool. And
all of our lovely fans and subscribers, but make sure you like and subscribe.
It's cool to see what you guys are doing. I know golf fans appreciate it, but we do too. So please keep it up.
For all the good people on YouTube, like and subscribe.
You guys have some good takes, so I'm happy to come on and shoot the...
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.